Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Okay. Well. That was a hard start. Goodness, hi.
Nothing better than dead air.
Oh, there we go. I hear music now.
Well, okay then. Well,
not a great musician there either.
No, this is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block. I am your host and chief cook and bottle washer, Jim Christina, on the phone with my good friend, Russ Avison.
Hola, Jimmy.
Hola, Russy. And we're just dealing with fires, dealing with smoke, dealing with good God only knows what we're dealing with these days. I swear.
Well, you said even the smoke is out there in Idaho, yeah?
Yeah, it is up here in Idaho as well, yeah.
But you don't have any fires there.
No, we don't. But you know, it's like you said, it's like you can see it, but you can't smell it.
Yeah, but they said it's still, we have LA and San Francisco right now have the worst air quality in the entire world.
Well, hey, you know what? San Francisco's number, Portland's number one.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I hear you. We're going to go back to phone calls tonight. So you know what? You can have a call-in number. We do have a call-in number. And if you want to call and talk to tonight's guest, the number here in the studio is, get a pen, 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. And they are, you know what? The guest that was on tonight, I have to say something. The guest that was on tonight, that is on tonight, was on July of 2018. And we were just, Bob Brill and myself and our guest tonight were just having a ball. We were laughing and joking and just, I mean, kicking ass. And Bobby Jean in Albuquerque had to pipe up and ask a serious question. Just totally threw us off our game. So...
So Bobby Jean, we still love you.
I actually already gave her a heads up. I was going to say that. So anyway, our guest tonight is a writer from Canada. Hey, he's going to correct me. I know 65 novels, 66 novels, somewhere in there. He is a science fiction aficionado and expert at science, all things science fiction. The guy writes storylines that are not only science fiction-ish, but humorous. And, well, you know what? Let's let him tell them about yourself or himself. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Ed Willett, or as he prefers to be known as Lee Arthur Chain or E.C. Blake, whichever you prefer. Welcome to the Writer's Block.
Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, you know what? It was so much fun the last time you were on that we couldn't pass you up. So
I do have to correct you. Have to correct you. It's not 60-some novels. It's 60-some books.
Okay.
But about two-thirds of them are nonfiction or half or something. I don't know. I lost track a long time ago, but I actually write nonfiction as well as fiction.
Okay, so 60 however many books.
Yeah, 20-some novels, and the rest are nonfiction sort or another.
Okay. You write under three separate names. Now, why? And these last novels have been under your own name. But why the nom de plumes?
Yeah, it's just marketing. When my first novels with my publisher in New York, Daw Books, were science fiction. And then they said, we'd like you to write fantasy, but we'd like you to write under a different name because you're changing genres, and it's a, you know, fresh start, and maybe this name will be bigger than your real name. So I wrote one book as Lee Arthur Chain, which was a kind of a epic fantasy, 150,000-word thing called Magebane. And then my next one turned out to be different from that. It was really a YA book. The main character is a 15-year-old girl. And but they didn't really have a YA line, so it was published in the adult market, but still it was completely different from what Lee Arthur Chain had written. So I got another new name, and I became E.C. Blake. Part of the initials were, you know, if people cared, they might potentially think that it was written by a woman. I went back to science fiction. When I went back to science fiction, I got my own name back. And then the current series, World Shapers, is science fiction, but it reads like fantasy, but at least I got to keep my own name.
Well, good for you. I mean,
it's a lot easier to sign books. Exactly. Yeah, it's a lot easier to sign books with your own name than with a pseudonym.
I'm absolutely certain of that. I mean, you know, okay, who do I make this out to, and who's signing this book?
When you're using a pseudonym, it's very different.
Oh, I'm sure. Russ, you had a question?
I just said, do you do anything other than write with all these books? I wouldn't think there's time to do anything else.
Well, I'm an editor as well, so I edit other people's books. And
of course you do.
And I have my podcast, The World Shapers. I do that. It's an hour-long conversation with some other science fiction fantasy author that I'm currently doing every week. Normally, I do it every 2 weeks because of the time commitment. So I do that. And when I get a chance, I sing with choirs or I do theater or stuff like that. So I do find a little time to do other things.
Let's talk about
this current book.
Yes.
And why don't you give us just a little thumbnail sketch, if you can. It's really a very difficult thing, I think, to do. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the book?
Well, sort of have to set up the whole series. The Moonlit World is book three in the World Shapers series. And the World Shapers series is set in a labyrinth of an extra-dimensional labyrinth of shaped worlds. And basically, these are like, if you think of it as authors living inside worlds that they've written, it's kind of like that. So all these shapers were trained in our world, the first world, by the mysterious Agrair, who had a school where she trained them. And upon graduation, she sent them into the labyrinth and said, here's a blank slate, make whatever kind of world you want. And so there's a lot of these people out there who have made these worlds. And my main character, Shauna Keyes, in the first book, she doesn't know she's the Shaper. She thinks she's just living in the ordinary world. But then something very horrible happens. Her friend is killed in what seems to be a terrorist attack. And she can't believe it's happening. She says, this isn't happening. And just like that, it isn't happening. It never did happen, except her friend is still dead. Nobody even remembers her friend ever existed. And then this mysterious stranger named Carl Yatzer shows up and tells her that, in fact, she is the Shaper of this world. He doesn't know why she doesn't remember it. She really should. But he also says that the guy who attacked her and has stolen the knowledge of the shaping of her world, and she's now lost control of her world and they have to get out of her world, and that he thinks she has the power to save the entire labyrinth of worlds if they can go from world to world and gather the knowledge of the making of these worlds and get it all to Agrair, who's wounded and hiding somewhere in the labyrinth in her own world. So that's kind of the big overarching storyline. She's trying to go to as many worlds as she can, gather the knowledge of the shaping of them, and get to Agrair to save the labyrinth. And the first book is kind of a big chase scene across our world, or her version of our world. Then book two was called Master of the World. It came out last year. It just came out in paperback, in mass market paperback in August. And it's set in a Jules Verne-inspired world. Well, that was a lot of fun to write because it's got, you know, weird airships and submarines and floating islands and strange weapons. Very steampunky. And then this current one is called The Moonlit World. And my working title for it kind of sums it up. In my head, I always kind of called it Werewolves and Vampires and Peasants. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of world that
it fits it appropriately, yes.
That joke is in the book in one fashion.
It is. That's
so
true.
They're in this world where werewolves and vampires are real, and they have to avoid getting eaten or turned into the undead, find out who shaped this world, and then gather the knowledge of the shaping of the world and then escape to the next world.
Well, and what's interesting about this, and I'm not a reader of this genre, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think what really made it fun for me is that, first of all, you put a lot of humor in it. It's kind of deadpan humor, but it's there. It's there if you pay attention. And one of the things that stuck out to me, not to do anything with the story, but your protagonist, Shauna, and she at one point introduces herself and she says, Keys, Shauna Keys. And I'm thinking, Bond, James Bond.
Bond, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, any pop culture reference that popped into my head, I could pretty much use, because although her world was not our world, it shared everything up until 10 years ago when she took over her role that she doesn't remember doing. So right. anything older than that I could use. So it's got Star Trek jokes and Star Wars jokes and Harry Potter
exactly.
jokes.
Exactly. That's
musical
right.
theater jokes. And
yeah. You know, I have to ask you, as I was reading through this about, well, it's really when she comes back to, when she meets Abraham, I'll just leave it at that. But it seemed to me Abraham actually could have been named Donald. Are
Donald?
You Donald? Who's the Donald in our world?
Oh, yeah, well, hey, we don't talk
it
about
seemed
that.
To me, yeah, but it seems to me that there was kind of some parallels along with that.
Well, nothing that crossed my mind when I was writing it, but, you know, there's the old joke I've often told. Isaac Asimov, in one of his books, one of his autobiographical books, said that he went into a university class that was teaching his story, his classic story, Nightfall, and he mm-hmm. listened to the professor talking, and he said afterwards, he went up to the professor and he said, that was very interesting, but I'm Isaac Asimov and I wrote that story and I didn't put any of that stuff in there. And the professor said, well, I'm very glad to meet you, but just because you wrote the story, what makes you think you know what's in it? One of the things about fiction
that's great, people
will find things in it that you maybe never thought were there, but maybe they are there in some subconscious fashion.
Right, right, right.
Well, that's the deal, Russ. You know, when you write 60, however many, 60-some books, you can throw names like Isaac Asimov around, and people won't even question you.
That's true. That's true. There was.
Well, I've been plugged into the science fiction world since I was a kid. So,
what were a couple of your first science fiction books that really impacted you?
Well, it was. You know, I'm old enough that I was reading the classics from the 50s and 60s when I was a kid. They were already a few years old, but you know, I didn't know that when I discovered them. So I was reading, you know, I, Robot by Isaac Asimov, a classic, the Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics, which echoed on down. Robert Heinlein was my biggest influence, undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Anything.
Stranger in a Strange Land, right?
Yeah, although as a kid, it was more of his juveniles, like Have Spacesuit, Will Travel, and The Star Beast, and Great Space Cadet, and all these great classic juvenile science fiction novels really influenced me. And Andre Norton was another one, Moon of Three Rings, and some of hers, because she also wrote young adult books. And while I read adult fiction, I was always reading stuff that was above what I, you know, my age. I always did like to read stories that had somebody my age in it, or, you know, just a little bit older with kids in it. So those are kind of my biggest influence. And Arthur C. Clarke. So it's like that, you know, the classic big three, Asimov, Clarke, and Heinlein, with a little Robert Silverberg thrown in and some Andre Norton, and then Tolkien, of course, when I discovered him.
Very good.
Sure. Well, I remember back in the 50s and 60s and possibly early 70s when Saturday Evening Post used to run broken up novels every week. And they would, you know, there would be a section of a novel in there until the whole book was done. And a lot of them were science fiction. Robert Heinlein and a lot of these guys, I think, started their big careers in the Post, Saturday Evening Post.
Well, it was like a whole different ball game than writing for the pulps that they mostly wrote for, you know, 5-6 cents a word. Those, you know, what's left of the pulps don't really pay much more now than they did back then. You could make a living writing a short story in the 50s at that kind of a price. You couldn't do that anymore.
Absolutely could.
But when you get to something like the Saturday Evening Post, and Playboy was a science fiction
market. Playboy, that's another one, yeah. And Argosy and All the Men True. All the men's magazines used to run the serials, the sequels, the serials and the bits of science fiction, westerns, whatever happened to be popular today.
Although when we were teenagers, the Playboys and things were all science fiction to us.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, because we bought them for the articles.
Now, of course. Of course.
I never read the magazine. I can say that quite honestly. I may have seen an issue, you know, lying around, I did once have there was a collection of the science fiction from Playboy that I kind of read, that I made sure my mom didn't know I was reading this thing that had Playboy on the cover. It was a library book, I guess.
You know, it's kind of a funny story. My cousin, Joe, she wrote a story that got published in Playboy, and I want to say 1966, 67. To this day, I couldn't tell you what the story was or what it was about. I never saw it.
It was a very good paying market. Very good paying market.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of that. I mean, well, the magazine was huge, so it had to be a good market. So, you know what? Let's take a real quick break, and we'll come back to you. Don't go away. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, the Writer's Block. And if you want to call and talk into Mr. Willett tonight, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815, and I'll say it again when we get back from commercial. But right now, let's have a little word about LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to LA Talk Radio. This is Jim Christina, your host of LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, which can be heard every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio. You know, in this time of COVID, when everyone is home working and getting tired of TV and getting tired of terrestrial radio, why not try this? Why not go to LA Talk Radio and see what our hosts and our programs have to tell you? It's a fun way to get your day through, and we have a very informative lineup during the day. So why don't you give us a try, latalkradio.com. And remember, every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, is the Writer's Block, hosted by myself, Bobby Jean Bell, and, of course, Russ Avison. So, LA Talk Radio.
I cannot hear anything.
Cannot hear me.
It sounds,
there we go. Are we back?
Oh, there we go. It sounded like you were talking, like you'd gone out into another room and were having a conversation.
Well, you know, I forgot to turn my mic back on. That happens when you're old and you've been on antibiotics for 6 months. Anyway, we're back in the studio with Ed Willett. And when you want to call and talk to Ed, the number is 323-203-0815. And we were talking about Playboy, and I'm sure that that was not the original conversation, but we managed to work our way to it. And now let's see if we can't work our way out of it. So I have to apologize, Ed, but everything I've had going on this week, I did not get a chance to finish this book. It's unusual, but it did happen this week, and I apologize. I apologize immensely. How's that?
Okay, immensely will do. No, would be good, but we'll settle for that.
You know, the last time we talked, and last time you were on, you used a word, and we repeated it several times because it was so funny. And then you said, "Well, you belong to a word of the week club," and you have to use that particular word of the week, or you lose your membership.
I guess I left my membership expire.
I'm going to say you probably let your membership go. So anyway, it was pretty funny. You had to have been there. It's July of 2018. You go back and listen to that show back then. Okay, so what's going on? Wait, okay, let's find out why science fiction. God, there's so many genres. There's like noir and there's detective and westerns. And why science fiction?
Well, when I was growing up, I had two older brothers, and they read it, so it was around the house. And, it was, I just kind of ran into it then. I know that I think the first science fiction novel I know for sure that I remember reading was by Robert Silverberg. It's called Revolt on Alpha C. He wrote it when he was 19 years old, and it was published about the time I was born, and my brother had a copy. I still have that book kicking around. And it made, you know, I just loved it. And so by the time I was 11, my course was set. That's when I wrote my first complete short story that I remember writing, just something to do on a rainy day. And I wrote a short story called Castor Glass Hypership Test Pilot. So by the age of 11, I was already, you know, set on my course of what I was going to write. My mother, who was a secretary, had a nice IBM Selectric at home, and she typed it up properly. And I took it to my junior high English teacher, Tony Tunbridge, and he did me the honor of taking it seriously. Like, he said, "I don't understand why your aliens did this, and what's the motivation for this character and all that." And I've credited him ever since for being the one who kind of made me think, you know, I'm going to keep doing this, but I'm going to do it better every time I do it. And I actually finally, for a novel that came out before the World Shaper series, it was called The City Born, I actually got a chance to dedicate it to Tony Tinbridge, and I tracked him down and I sent him a copy because it had his name in the front of it. So that made me happy that I was able to do that. And then I wrote more and more. I wrote three novels in high school. My friend, I had more than one friend, but my best friend in high school, his name was John Smith. I'm not making that up.
Of course it was.
He later married a girl named Jane. So it's John and Jane Smith. And we would get together in an empty classroom after school, and we would write, and we would read what we had written, and we would alternate sentences. And I was writing science fiction. He was writing a historical romance called Of Scarlet, Silver, and Steel. I still remember the title. And we would alternate sentences as we read our stuff to each other, and we thought that was hilarious. And our friends thought we were a little strange, but that's okay. And I was writing this stuff, and I showed it around to my friends, and they said, you know, they liked it. I could obviously tell a story that people enjoyed. And so that's how my course was set. And everything I wrote was science fiction, except, oddly enough, my first published short story was not science fiction. It's about the only published short story I've ever had that wasn't science fiction. So actually, my very first published short story wasn't science fiction, but after that, it was science fiction all the way.
Gotcha. Okay, here comes the big question of the night. Who's the better writer? Ed Willett, Lee Arthur Chain, or E.C. Blake?
Edward Willett has a wider oeuvre. He has written many more different kinds of things than Lee Arthur Chain, who, after all, is a one-hit wonder. He's only written one book. Uh-huh. And E.C. Blake has only written a single trilogy. So I would have to say that Edward Willett, at least, is the far more experienced writer and capable of doing a wider variety of things.
Gotcha.
Now, on my podcast, where I interview science fiction fantasy writers, E.C. Blake came on as a guest host in one of the early episodes and interviewed me, which I thought was very, very nice of him. He sounds a lot like me. He sounds a lot like me, except he has a Southern accent, so he was talking like this, and I was responding to him. I would say, he'd say, so why do you write the things you do? And I'd say, well, you see, it's like this. So I had that was a great episode. He made a very good guest host, but he's only made that one appearance.
Well, he only wrote one book, so, or one trilogy.
Three books, one trilogy.
I had a question. At least with the Shapers, and it looks like you have several books that involve Shapers, that Shapers can basically do anything and create any kind of world. And so it seemed like the opportunities and potential to go different directions is endless, because there's no restriction on anything that you write about. And it was fascinating to see how that worked.
And that is actually kind of the impetus for creating the idea in the first place. I often say I was inspired, you might say, by Doctor Who, which I think has the greatest storytelling conceit that anybody's ever come up with. Mm-hmm. Because the way it's evolved, you can tell a story anytime in the history of the universe, anywhere in the universe, and you don't even have to be internally consistent, because it's that timey-wimey thing, and you can change timelines, and, you know, what has happened in the past is not fixed, and what's going to happen in the future is not fixed. So literally, you can tell any story in a Doctor Who setting. And I wanted something a bit like that. And yeah, so with the way I set this up, the shaped worlds can be anything. In the first book, when Carl shows up, he has just emerged from a world that was shaped by somebody who loved Shakespeare. So he shows up wearing like Elizabethan costume, and there's a reference to it in Moonlit World where he mentions.
There is. I was just going to say that.
Yeah. It was very difficult because you had to speak in iambic pentameter and end everything with rhyming couplets, which is one reason why I set that in the past of the storyline, because I really didn't. I like the idea of there being a Shakespearean world, but I really didn't want to try to write that one. But yeah, and the next book, if it happens, is going to be set in a film noir world, like a Humphrey Bogart gangstery kind of world.
Which you also make reference to in this one.
Yeah, at the very end, there's a hint of what would be in the next one. And, you know, I could write a My Little Pony world if I wanted to, but I probably wouldn't go that route.
Now, I've got to ask you about, I mean, the book is very complex as far as characters and where they go and how it's all connected. And there is a funny line where I think it's Shauna is is she's telling a story to someone. I don't want to give away too much, but she's talking to someone and she's making up a lot of things. And as she gets through this very elaborate story, she thinks to herself and she goes, am I going to contradict myself with these lies? And I don't even understand how the writers of these fantasy worlds can keep everything organized. And I thought that was kind of a kickback to you and how you do things. So I was going to ask you, how do you keep everything organized?
That's a good question. And I'm not sure I always do, but what usually happens is in the first draft, you know, I bang my way through it and there are contradictions and things and I will go through it. And that's one of the things I look for is the next time. Oh, because the next time through, I can remember what I've written. So I go back to the earlier part and I say, oh, later on, I contradict this. I've got to plant something here that will make that work. So it's that kind of a process. And then that's also something that editors help with. And I have one of the best editors in the business, Sheila E. Gilbert, Hugo Award-winning editor for Daw Books. And she's been in the business since the 80s, and she's read an enormous amount of science fiction and fantasy, and she immediately will zero in on the things that I maybe overlooked or that I thought, well, nobody will notice that. She always notices that. Whatever it is you thought, maybe nobody will notice, she notices. So the editors helps that a lot, too. With a really big sprawling series, this one, at least, it has to be consistent within each world, and there's the overarching stuff has to be consistent, but there's a lot of play because every world is different. For somebody like George R. R. Martin or one of these huge sprawling fantasy epics, I don't know how they do it. They have assistants and spreadsheets and things on the walls with, you know, string yarn going from spot to spot like conspiracy theorists or something. I don't know. Because I look at some of those and I think, I don't know how they keep it all straight, and I'm a writer. So.
Well, I did find it humorous that you threw that line in there, though, when she was trying to figure out how the writers keep it organized.
Yeah, I do like to do that a little bit. She'll sometimes think that, you know, she feels like she's fallen into a fantasy novel. Or
yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, going into characters, when you create a character in one of your novels, do you create the character to be shared in other novels, or do you write him for one story only?
Well, if it's going to be a series, obviously the character will carry on and on. But sure, every character is unique to the story in which he or she appears. And I'm not one of the people who does a lot of, you know, there are people who do really detailed character sketches.
Right.
Excuse me. They'll have all sorts of pages and pages of stuff. I don't really do that. I will have kind of a general background of the character, and then I just write. And the character just kind of flows. Shauna is easy in one respect. She's a first-person narrator, and she does have all my sense of humor. So she's not me, but there's a lot of me in there, more so than some characters.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I don't know. One of the great things about doing my podcast where I talk to other writers is asking these kinds of questions. Everybody does it differently. We're all dealing with trying to solve these same problems of believable characters and believable plots and all that. And everybody has a different approach. And that's one of the great things about talking to writers like you do on here.
Right.
Finding out that everybody's unique.
Right. And we do. And you know, one question that we ask almost every writer that's on the show, and we've pretty much got the same answer back from almost everybody, which amazes me, is the fact that the question is, do you allow your characters to dictate the story in your book, or do you make a character stick to a script?
Characters evolve as you write, and they change the story that they're in as you go. So I wouldn't say that the characters dictate it, but they certainly do make things different than perhaps you initially thought when you were just planning it out at the beginning.
That's pretty
much. And sometimes they will do surprising things. I've had the character that I introduced just because I needed a viewpoint character in a particular spot, and that character turned into a major character, and they didn't even exist when I had originally planned the story. So that kind of thing happens to all of us, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's a good point to make. I mean, especially new writers who are just starting out, you know, they get frustrated because, you know, their characters are not allowing them to keep to their script. And, well, you're not supposed to. Just, you know, let them take your story.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. In the end, the story is likely to be better for it. Or if it completely falls off the rails, then maybe you take those characters and tell a different story about them and exactly. Go back and try again.
Exactly. We're going to take another real quick break, and we're going to Mr. Avison, would you like to tell us about a little business you have out there in the Sespe River? And we're going to hear a word about All Dogs Rule.
Yeah, All Dogs Rule is a pretty unique place. It's a place where your dog can go stay if you can't take your dog with you. And what makes us unique are several things. First of all, it's cage-free. We have a 20-acre ranch in Fillmore, California. We have converted barns. So the barn stalls, which are about 12 by 15 feet, and they have rubber flooring and shavings and elevated beds. And then there's a large doorway that goes to an outside yard, which is about 20 by 30 feet. And the dogs have free access to that back and forth all day long. We also have 7 dog park areas where the dogs get to run and play. We have grass and trees out there. And we put dogs in groups of 2, 3, or 4 based on their size and their temperament. And if you happen to have a dog that is not dog friendly, not a problem. We have areas they can be, and they can see other dogs, but they don't have to physically interact with them. We do transportation all over Conejo Valley, parts of Los Angeles County, all of Ventura County. Our vans are out every single day dropping off and picking up dogs, or you're welcome to bring your dog out to be with us as well. And we do special little things. We have a service where we can give them a little frozen Kong at night before they go to bed. We can do individualized play times where we can bring the dogs down to the river, down to the arena. They can play chukot or frisbee. And we have 24/7 on-site caretakers. So that means your dogs are never left by themselves. There is always someone here monitoring, making sure that everything is safe and happy for them. So if you're interested and you're in the area, of course, All Dogs Rule, our phone number here is 805-524-1100. That's 805-524-1100. Or you can find us on the web. The website is www.alldogsrule.com. When you bring your dog here and they come back home, it'll leave you wondering whose vacation was better.
The dogs. I know that for a fact. I mean, my dog had a great time there. So, in fact, she was really pissed at us. She didn't want to come home. So what did she do? Marches right in the living room and pees on the floor. God bless you, Bella. Okay.
You know what? It didn't take me long to teach her to do that either.
No, you know what? She learned things in like 5 minutes. So you're right. It probably didn't. Okay. Now 6:30. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christini, your host. On the air with Russ Avison and Mr. Ed Willett from Canada, eh? That would be Canada, eh? And we're talking about Russ's new book, Ed's new book, and Ed's writing style and how he got into what he's doing. And pretty soon here we're going to talk about his process, which we can start here in just a minute. If you want to call and talk to Ed, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And feel free to give him a shout and let him know what you think. If you've read any of his books, especially. Oh, and I also want to say while I'm doing announcements, if you can, and you're interested in the books that we showcase here on the Writer's Block, you can go to outwestshop.com. That's a Bobby Jean Bell, Jim Bell's business out there in Albuquerque. And they list virtually every book that we've had on this show. So they're all available. No matter when the show was on, they can get you the book. So keep that in mind if you're interested in some great readings from some great writers, new and old. And, okay, we have a caller. Would you like to bring him in?
So keep that in mind if you're interested. Hello.
Bobby Jean.
Oh, God, it's that me. Means we're going to have a serious question.
We are. All right, Bobby Jean, do you want to say hi to Ed?
I want to say hi to Ed. Hi, Ed. Are you still there?
I'm still here. I'm not going anywhere.
I've been enjoying the show, you guys. This is great. And hello to Russ. I never get to say hello to Russ.
I know, Bobby Jean. We just never cross paths.
Yeah. Well, you do, but not often.
We could probably get rid of Jim, and you and I could do this thing.
You know what? You could.
Oh,
it wouldn't even cost you a lot
I've
of money.
Listening to the show, and of course, always such fun. And Ed, I do have a question for you.
Okay.
So here's my question. So COVID-19, is it science fiction? Did you anticipate it? Is it influencing your current writing, maybe something that you're writing now? And how has it impacted you this year with book releases and things like that?
Good question.
That's a long question.
Well, on the science fiction front, I mean, I think the pandemic thing goes back to Stephen King's The Stand, and it was way worse than this relatively minor virus. It's been talked about in science fiction for a long time because we always knew that pandemics happen. I mean, this is I didn't quite get the 58 one, but this is my third, because there was the flu in 67, and there was the flu in 2009, and now this one. And then if you throw AIDS in there, that's a pandemic too. So, if you live long enough, you go through these things. It hasn't really figured in any of my writing. And as far as how it's affected me, I was writer in residence at the Saskatoon Public Library when it started in March. And I've been driving, it's about a 2.5-hour drive from here. And I'd been driving up there and meeting with authors, and that stopped. But all it meant was that I did it without leaving home. And since I'd been spending a night in a hotel and eating restaurant food one night a week, I suddenly was making more money from the gig than I had before. The big difference was that my wife was working at home, and she took over my office, so I was relegated to a laptop in an armchair in the living room. But it all worked out, and it didn't really change me what I did too much, except I have not been writing in coffee shops and pubs like I like to. I've been kind of stuck writing at home.
Yeah. Well, Moonlit World, which you're all talking about tonight, it just released, Ed, right? Like September 15th or so?
Yeah, Tuesday of this week, yeah.
Yeah, so congratulations on that.
Thank you, and I have another one out next week, so...
Oh my gosh! So when you got your date, was that pre-COVID? Or how? Even though it just launched a couple days ago, how have you found the launch for this? Is it different than when you launched, Cityscape and some of the others because of COVID, or has it had no impact?
Well, it's a little bit. For example, I don't have any author's copies. They managed to get one to me, but the warehouse, it's not, they're concentrating their shipping efforts on getting it to bookstores. So I'm down the pecking order there, and I don't have my author's copies, which I hope they'll come pretty soon because I want to enter it in the Saskatchewan Book Awards. So there's that. And I'm not able to do any bookstore signings or anything like that. I've never launched these books very much because a local launch doesn't make a lot of sense for these books. So when I do something with a more local interest, I'll do a local launch event. But mostly I just do all the social media stuff and all these interviews. I've been doing a lot of interviews and blog posts and things like that. So that's kind of what I've normally done because I'm just kind of remote from any place where I could do an effective launch and I'm not going to be set on a book tour or anything like that. So it hasn't changed too much except for not being able to get my books.
Well, I'm so glad to have a chance to chat with you. And I know Jim just did a nice little shout out for the Out West Shops bookshop, and your book is there. It's on the writer's block. And there's no cover showing on it yet because bookshop.org, which is our distributor, has the book up and available to order, but without a cover. So it looks a little odd right now.
That seems odd.
But I'm so excited for you to be launching a new book and another one next week. Congratulations. And gentlemen, I will turn it right back to you guys. Have a great rest of the show.
Okay. Thanks, Bobby Jane. Thanks for the call. That is the other co-host for the Writer's Block, Bobby Jean Bell, chiming in with her own indubitable way. Miss Giggles, we call her.
That's appropriate.
And she's in Albuquerque?
She's in Albuquerque, yep. Yep.
I don't know if I mentioned that I was actually, I'm actually a New Mexico native. I was born in New Mexico.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, Silver City.
How in the hell did you wind up in Saskatoon?
Regina.
I mean, that is really off the beaten path.
My dad was, he was preaching at a little church in a little town called Baird, New Mexico. And then shortly after that, I was only there for a couple of years. Then they moved to Texas, and he taught school there in Lubbock. And then we moved to a little town called Tulia for a couple of years. And he got hired by Western Christian College up here in Saskatchewan, a town called Weyburn. And so when I was 8 years old, I moved to Canada and lived here ever since, except I went to university in Arkansas. So I'm a dual citizen. I go back and forth in my schooling and everything. I've lived
Arkansas?
Up here ever since. Yeah, Arkansas. Harding University, Searcy, Arkansas. First place of the indoor tanning parlor.
That's Arkansas was where they invented the toothbrush.
Was it?
Yeah, any other state, it would have been the teeth brush.
I had not heard that one.
That's good, Jim.
I'm just saying. Sorry, Arkansas. We love you.
Yeah. The other story is, do you know what a compliment is in Arkansas?
What?
Hey, nice tooth.
We love you, Bill Clinton. We really do. Okay. When do you like to write it? I mean, I know you like to go to coffee shops and stuff, but what part of the day is it that you like to set aside for writing?
I'm not really that scheduled. It's depending on what else I'm working on, what just feels right during the day. Normally, if I'm really working hard on writing a novel, I'm probably doing it in two sessions, one in the morning and one in the afternoon for a couple of hours at a time, two or three hours at a time. But sometimes I'm just, banging it out when I have a few minutes, and I happen to be sitting with my laptop late in the evening too. So I'm not a very...
Sure.
Regimented in that regard.
So you're not one that has to sit down and write 5,000 words a day or a week or a month or whatever.
I have my own publishing company, Shadow Paw Press, and I'm bringing out some of my older stuff. So I've been rewriting older stuff as well as writing new stuff. And the next thing I'll be working on is actually not the next World Shapers book. I've sold a space opera to Daw. Called The Tangled Stars. So that's, I'll be getting on that really soon because it's due in March of next year. So very soon now I will start writing on a more regular basis. Right now I've been doing more rewriting and I've been working on my podcast and I've got this anthology I kickstarted that comes out next week. So lots of editing stuff.
Well, there's a question that we've asked the last two or three guests on the show and we're getting much varied answers. When you were writing, and are you writing to, number one, make yourself happy, make your readers or your fans happy, or do you write for your own ego?
I write because I like telling stories. So I think I would have to go with the first one.
Okay. Your fans.
No, me.
Oh, yourself.
I'm writing for me. I'm writing because I enjoy writing. I have these stories I want to tell. I like telling the stories. Secondary, I mean, I'm hoping there are readers, although it's a bit like the toothbrush. It might be fan, not fans.
Right. Yeah, reader.
My reader.
All my friend.
Just like our listener.
Yeah, our mini listener. Yeah.
But ultimately, I think, and when I talk to the writers on my podcast, that's one of the questions I ask is, why do you write? And mostly it comes down to the variation on, because if I didn't, the voices in my head would drive me crazy. That seems to be a fairly common response.
Do you get writer's block? And if you do, how do you get out of it?
Not really. If I set my mind to, I get procrastination, which is not quite the same thing. If I need to write and I sit down in front of a keyboard, I can make the words happen. Part of that goes back to being a newspaper weekly newspaper reporter and editor is how I started my career.
Right.
And I wrote thousands of words a week and the paper came out whether you had written them or not. So you'd better have written them.
Right. Yeah. You and Richard Polinelli, you both were newspaper guys.
Yeah, it does make a difference, I think, when it comes to banging out the words. It's probably also why I kill all my keyboards, because I worked on a manual typewriter back in those days and I just pound my keyboards.
Pounded, yeah. 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 Do you write for a certain age group, or are all age groups fairly welcome to read your stuff?
It's odd. With the World Shapers books, the character's 27. The Moonlit World does have a teenager in it, but it's the first teenager that's really appeared. And he's literally a teenage werewolf.
Right.
But most of them, they don't have any young characters. And yet, the first two books were both longlisted for the Sunburst Award, which is a major Canadian award, in the young adult category.
Uh-huh.
So I think they're teen friendly, even though they're not specifically written for teens, these particular ones. Uh-huh. I have written books directed for the YA market, and I've written books for really young children, nonfiction, and one picture book, actually. But mostly I'm my natural, you know, given my druthers, I'd probably be a YA author, but I've ended up writing more adult stuff than YA. So I kind of go back and forth.
Well, a lot of kids don't read anymore. So, I mean, it's like, what's that? You know, you're going to rip me away. You're going to take my phone away. What's that?
Yeah. reading has always been a bit of a niche thing, really. I mean, even when I was growing up, my friends, there were only a few of us that were big readers. And maybe it's gotten worse. I don't know. Maybe this just switched. They're reading lots of stuff, but it's not necessarily books. Although my daughter was a big reader. So,
Do you consider your novels dystopian?
I don't think of them that terms, but some of them are certainly in dystopian worlds. Not this one. I mean, it could be. Any one of these worlds could be dystopian. The City Born was pretty much dystopian. And the Masks trilogy, the one that E.C. Blake wrote, is quite a dystopian world. So, but they're not specifically designed to be dystopia. It's more like unpleasant worlds are where adventures tend to happen.
Okay.
Whereas if everything's going perfectly, you know, it's kind of dull.
I'll buy that. We got to take another quick break, and it's actually for our publicist, if you really want to know. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we're talking on with Mr. Ed Willett. And we'll be back in about 40 seconds. Right now, I'd like to hear a word from Creative Edge.
When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't going to be the same as other publicity firms. You see, the folks at Creative Edge work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals, and they push much harder to get them noticed and to get them booked. They believe communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is exactly how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and their clients' needs. Creative Edge is your brand, is your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicist, and you'll find them at www.creative-edge.services.
And we are back at 6:45, and we are on the phone with Ed Willett, and this is LA Talk Radio's The Writer's Block, and I'm on with Russ Avison, myself, and Ed Willett, and we're talking to Ed about his new books, his old books, his several nom de plumes, dystopian novels, and golly, I don't know what else we can throw in there, Ed. I think we're running out of storylines here.
Well, I mean, if we wanted to mention the anthology that's coming up, I'd be happy to talk about that.
Well, then you know what? Please. Let's talk about the anthology that's coming up, because we just did at Tuscany Bay Books. We just did 1, 2, 3, 4. I think we're on our fifth one now. The Planetary Anthology.
Right.
So go ahead.
Well, this one was interesting, and it goes back to what we're talking about too, because it does tie into World Shaper. It's called Shapers of Worlds, and it all came about through the podcast where I talk to writers about their process. And I have this publishing company, Shadow Paw Press, and at the annual meeting of SASC Books, which is the Saskatchewan Publishers Association, last year, somebody came in and gave a presentation on kickstarting, how they'd successfully kickstarted this anthology. And I thought, hey, I know some authors. So I asked my first year guests if they wanted to be part of an anthology, which I would kickstart. And I got enough people interested, and I successfully kickstarted it. And these are some of the major writers in the field. So it comes out in ebook next week and in print a couple of months later in November. And the authors are like big names. Shauna McGuire, Tanya Huff, David Weber, L.D. Modisett Jr., Dave Butler, Christopher Rocchio, John C. Wright, Shelley Adina, some guy named Edward Willett are the original ones. And then we've got reprints from John Scalzi, David Brin, Joe Haldeman, Julie Shineda, Fonda Lee, Dr. Charles E. Gannon, Gareth L. Powell, Derek Kunzkin, and Thuraya Dyer. And these are like international bestsellers in some cases. And we have nominees or winners of every major award in the field in this collection. So I'm really excited about it. In some ways, I feel it because I did the cover art. I bought the cover art, but I designed the cover and I did the layout and I edited and I made this all happen and I raised the money and I paid the authors and I got it printed. And it's like, this is like my baby right now. And I actually feel more excited about it than I do sometimes about books where I wrote every word in it because I did so much more on it. Because once you start independently publishing, you discover just how much publishers do that you don't think about when all you're doing is writing the words.
You know, that is absolutely true. And in Tuscany Bay, I mean, you know, we have to, we format, we edit, you know, put together the book, do the covers, the cover art. We do everything. And it's you're right. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it just, you know, and I don't know, this, you know, 14 times through every story in the book and trying to catch every last typo and all of that.
Which is
impossible.
And
yet, I enjoyed it. And I'm very proud of what's come out. So I'm looking forward to it coming out next week.
Okay, well, you know what? We're out of time, Ed. So we're just going to have to say goodnight to you. But how about letting our listeners know where they can find you on the web?
Okay, my main website is edwardwillett.com, W-I-L-L-E-T-T. My podcast is at theworldshapers.com. My publishing company is shadowpawpress.com. I'm on Twitter at E. Willett. I'm on Facebook at edward.willett. I'm on Instagram at Edward Willett Author, because I failed to get the same name for every one of my social media.
You and about half the authors that I've been talking to. Okay, well, thanks so much, Ed, and thanks for spending some evening time with us, and we always love it when our authors take the time to sit down and have a chat.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Thanks so much, Ed. It was great meeting you.
Very well. Well, welcome. Next week, we have David Kettlehake, and his book is called Gray. I don't know anything about it yet, but I promise, David, I will finish this book for you. And Russ, great to have you on. Great to always be with you.
And it's good to hear you sounding so good, Jim.
Oh, man, I tell you, I just feel like a million bucks. I feel like a million bucks.
All right. Well, I'll be over for some of the change on that then.
I'll give you half. How's that?
All right. There we go.
Okay. All right. And for Russ Avison, myself, Bobby Jean Bell, the Writer's Block, and, of course, LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.